A reading from the letter of James. Not many of you should become teachers, my brothers and sisters, for you know that we who teach will be judged with greater strictness. For all of us make many mistakes. Anyone who makes no mistakes in speaking is perfect, able to keep the whole body in check with the bridle. If we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we guide their whole bodies. Or look at ships. Though they are so large that it takes strong winds to drive them, yet they are guided by a very small rudder wherever the will of the pilot directs. So also the tongue is a small member, yet it boasts of great exploits. How great a forest is set ablaze by a small fire. And the tongue is a fire. The tongue is placed among our members as a world of iniquity. It stains the whole body, sets on fire the cycle of nature, and is itself set on fire by hell. For every species of beast and bird, of reptile and sea creature, can be tamed and has been tamed by the human species. But no one can tame the tongue, a restless evil, full of deadly poison. With it, we bless the Lord and Father, and with it we curse those who are made in the likeness of God. From the same mouth come blessing and cursing. My brothers and sisters, this ought not to be so. Does a spring pour forth from the same opening both fresh and brackish water? Can a fig tree, my brothers and sisters, yield olives or a grapevine figs? No more can salt water yield fresh. Do not speak evil against one another, brothers and sisters. Whoever speaks evil against another or judges another speaks evil against the law and judges the law. But if you judge the law, you are not a doer of the law, but a judge. There is one lawgiver and judge who is able to save and to destroy. So who then are you to judge your neighbor? Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church. The Lord be with you.
And also with you.
The Holy Gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ according to Mark. They went on from there and passed through Galilee. He did not want anyone to know it, for he was teaching his disciples, saying to them, "The Son of Man is to be betrayed into human hands, and they will kill him. And 3 days after being killed, he will rise again." But they did not understand what he was saying and were afraid to ask him. Then they came to Capernaum, and when he was in the house, he asked them, "What were you arguing about on the way?" But they were silent, for on the way they had argued with one another who was the greatest. He sat down, called the 12, and said to them, "Whoever wants to be first must be last of all and servant of all." Then he took a little child and put it among them. And taking it in his arms, he said to them, "Whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me. And whoever welcomes me welcomes not me, but the one who sent me." The Gospel of Christ.
This is going to be a difficult sermon because it is self-indicting. And what I mean by that is I will be indicting myself as I preach it. So let's just dive right in. In the letter of James, James does something curious in the reading that we heard today. He starts off talking about one thing and then pivots relatively quickly into something that goes a whole lot further. So let's begin with where he starts, deal with something to do with that, and then get into the meat of the matter today. You heard Holly read this morning that James had said that not many of you should become teachers, my brothers and sisters, for you know that we who teach will be judged with greater strictness. So here I am being a teacher. And I think we could include other leaders and instructors, anybody who has a platform by which to address other people. I think all the different ways that that could be taken can be included here. Here I am as a teacher, and I read that, and of course I've read this for decades. We who teach will be judged with greater strictness. Okay, begs the question, judged by whom? Well, it would make sense in a Christian letter that we must assume that judgment would be from, you know, God, I would think, right? Well, then you go to the second part of our reading, and in chapter 4, where James is telling us not to speak evil against one another, because if we do so, we are sitting in judgment with one another. He's saying, don't judge your brothers and sisters. And why? He says, there is one lawgiver and judge who is able to save and to destroy. One lawgiver and one judge who is able to save, to make completely whole, and to destroy. Now, who is he talking about? Of course, he's talking about God. God is the one who judges. He's able to save and to destroy. So, we who teach will be judged more strictly. By God, presumably, who has the power to destroy. What that does to a person, if you decide to hang on to it tightly, is it makes it very difficult to imagine how on earth we're supposed to presume to do anything in front of a group of people, to have any kind of influence on a group of people. When I was in Squamish 20 years ago, in that church, I was very, very much aware of this passage. And the interesting thing is, okay, why are we going to be judged more strictly, especially by God, and especially if we're talking about in the context of Christian leadership, if we who are going to take roles of Christian leadership and instruction and education and teaching, and we are going to be judged more strictly, what that kind of says is you got to make sure you're teaching the right thing, that you're doing right by the people, that you're getting it correct, right? So 20 years ago in Squamish, I was very much aware of that and endeavored to make sure that I was teaching rightly and leading people in the ways of God and all of that good stuff. Problem is, here it is 20 years later, and I teach differently now than I did then. And I'm not just talking about technique. I'm talking about content. So for the logical person that I am, does that mean I was wrong 20 years ago? Because if I was wrong 20 years ago and I still had people in front of me that were under my influence, and if I'm going to be judged more strictly because of that, if I was actually doing it wrong 20 years ago, would there not be something that God would hold me to account for what I was doing with the congregation in Squamish? Because I taught differently than I teach you now. To make matters worse, where I was 20 years ago, the things I teach now, I would have said then were wrong. So does that mean I'm wrong now? And if that's the case, I guess there's a concern. Does that make any sense that that's how it ought to be? I don't think so. And I think James, in writing this down, and by the way, what I'm about to tell you now is one of the things that Derwin from 20 years ago would say is completely wrong. Why are you even listening, okay? What you're going to hear, I would say was wrong 20 years ago, just so you know. But I think James, in his context 2,000 years ago, in where he's coming from, is understandably wanting to move the people he's writing to in the correct direction. And part of the way of doing that is wanting to provide a warning or to communicate the need to make sure that we're on the right path. And he does so using a bit of a threat based on his understanding of how God operates, because that was how people understood God operated 2,000 years ago. Now, we've said this before. In the Hebrew Bible, from Genesis all the way to Malachi, we have seen a development of the understanding of how God works. How Yahweh is portrayed at the beginning is modified in the middle of the Hebrew Bible. It's changed again in the end of the Hebrew Bible. When Jesus shows up, we get a different picture again of how God operates. And then even in the New Testament, after the Gospels, we start to see further tweaking of our understanding of how God works. So the Bible records over 2,000 years how our understanding of how God operates changes. James, however, is obviously still holding on to the context of kings and kingdoms and the gods that operated those kingdoms, and when battles were fought, the god that, well, the country that won, well, their god was more powerful than the other god, and this kind of thing. And it was still a time where even climatological things happening, like lightning and thunder and whirlwinds, were all seen to be acts of God quite literally. So it's understandable that 2,000 years ago, James would say, yeah, God has the power to save and to destroy, and he's the one that's going to be making the evaluation on what you do. But may I suggest that in the 2,000 years since, we have also come to understand more about how God operates, and that James's context from 2,000 years ago isn't necessarily correct. Dun, dun, dun. That's not the self-indictment part of my sermon, by the way. That's still yet to come. But let me just simply say that to think that we must operate in fear that the one who is able to destroy is going to judge us as teachers is not a helpful way to operate. Now, to make it even more scary, James simply said, we who teach will be judged more strictly, which means you who don't teach will be judged just less strictly, by the same one with the power to save or to destroy. None of us get out of this. And that would be a difficult thing to embrace, especially in light of how Jesus conducted himself in his ministry and in his work. We see Jesus extending grace to everybody. The people who didn't receive his grace were the ones who actively turned away from him. But it's not that Jesus wasn't extending that grace. They just did not want to take it. And so this warning nevertheless is given. And now, having dealt with that, and of course there's more that could be said, we see that James continues on in his case by going to something far more common. He says, we who teach will be judged more strictly, but then says, all of us make many mistakes. It's like he's saying, you know, nobody's perfect. Well, that's true. So coming back to this thing, we who teach will be judged more strictly, for all of us make many mistakes. Nobody's perfect. Who then could we even say does the judging? Well, I think we could see that those who are in leadership and instruction are indeed judged more strictly by those who are under their instruction and those who are following their leadership. We have a federal election happening tomorrow night. All of our political leaders are certainly judged more strictly, are they not? Because we want our leaders, we want our instructors, we want our teachers to set a good example. We want those who are leading to lead well. We want those who are teaching to know what they're talking about. We want those who are preaching to practice what they preach. And so, yes, there is more strict judgment to come. But I don't think it's the worry about God so much as it is the recognition that anybody in leadership has a responsibility to what it is that they are teaching and how they are leading. Now, James does say, yeah, we all make many mistakes. And then he narrows it down even further to the part that gets really, really tough this morning. He says, anyone who makes no mistakes in speaking is perfect, able to keep the whole body in check with a bridle. And then he goes on to talk about the tongue, you know, the part of our body that's responsible for our speech. And he uses some analogies saying, you know, we can put a bit in the mouth of a horse and we can control that large animal with this small piece. And a large ship can be controlled by a relatively small rudder. And then he uses more provocative language and says, you know, the tongue is a fire. And, you know, all it takes is one match to light a forest on fire, right? The tongue is like that. And then he goes even further and he says, it is a restless evil full of deadly poison. We get the impression that James is taking this particular topic pretty seriously. What we say has a huge impact. And now, of course, he's gone beyond just what teachers and leaders say. He's talking to all of us, right? Because all of us have tongues, all of us have words that we can say, and the impact of those words certainly has an effect. James will have in his mind Proverbs 18, which says, among other things, death and life are in the power of the tongue. Now, of course, we can't take that literally. We can't say that you can actually kill somebody by speaking or raising them up by speaking, but we can understand the poetic imagery that is there, emphasizing how important our words are. That you can build people up if you speak positively to them, but you can also tear them down quite significantly. It's been shown over and over again that if a child grows up, especially in its developing years, with negative talk from their parents, that kid is going to have a tough go of it. And psychology has proven to us even today that our self-talk has a huge impact. Even if we're not saying the words out loud, what we say to ourselves in our minds, if we have positive statements, it builds us up and moves us in a positive way. But if we have negative self-talk, it just contributes to a sense of depression and negativity and loneliness that is not healthy. Indeed, death and life are in the power of the tongue. So James is saying, we have to pay attention to this. And then he says, the kicker to the whole thing. He says, why is the tongue a deadly evil? He says, because with it we bless the Lord and Father, and with it we curse those who are made in the likeness of God. He says, you guys, this must not be, right? A grapevine can't produce figs. If you've got a spring of water, it can't produce both fresh water and brackish water. It doesn't make sense. If we are going to be following in the way of Jesus, how can we be people who on the one hand bless God and the other hand curse somebody else? How can we say we love God and not love our neighbor? We can't do that, he says. Now, why is James emphasizing this so much? I mean, the people he's writing to, have they been cursing other people? By the way, let's make this clear. When we're talking about cursing here, we're not talking about the stereotypical witchcraft thing, I put a curse on you. You know, like, that's not what we're talking about here. And nor are we simply talking about cussing, you know, the idea of using bad words to, you know, call someone down. You know, conversely, blessing isn't just saying that you're blessing somebody. You know, if someone from the southern states is talking to you and says, bless your heart, understand they're not complimenting you, right? Okay? So we're not talking cursing in some kind of way like that, but it is certainly something negative towards the other person. Given the letter of James and the people he's writing to, is there any reason to think that the congregation was actually doing this? Well, I would say yes, indeed. James is writing because his congregation has been scattered. They've had to flee Jerusalem because they're being persecuted. Guys like Saul are looking for reasons to put them into prison just because they're Christians. Some of them are being killed. They are being oppressed by people who are unjustly trying to take them out. And I could imagine that the congregation would be very justified in their own minds. They're saying, what are you talking about, James? Don't you know what these people are doing? Didn't you see what happened to Stephen? They threw rocks at him until he died. Of course you're going to curse those people. How can I call them my neighbor? How can I possibly take a course of action that would suggest that they deserve any kind of grace at all when you look at what they're doing to us? And yet James says, with our tongues, we bless God and curse those made in the image of God. Their persecutors are made in the image of God. These people doing unjust things to James's congregation are human beings created in the image of God. And James has to tell them, don't give in to the temptation to curse. Do not let your hearts be so hardened against them that you stop treating them as persons. Do not give in to the temptation to depersonalize them, to demonize them, to make them other, so that you can somehow treat them differently than the human beings beloved by God that they happen to be. And of course, James would say this on the basis of Jesus' own example, because Jesus never cursed anybody. Those who were torturing him to death, of them he said, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. And so James's point is squarely aimed at the example given to us in Jesus. And he's saying, if we are going to be ones who follow Jesus and Jesus' way, we've got to come to terms with this because the temptation is great. So today, we don't have anybody persecuting us, trying to throw us into prison, nothing like that. We don't have anybody to depersonalize that way. But our hospitals are full now because there's all sorts of people who, for the most insane reasons, are anti-vaccinations. They are the ones who are getting sick. They are the ones who are filling up the hospitals. And as I said at the beginning of the service, if someone gets a heart attack now, will there be the care that they need? Or is it filled up with people who are anti-masking, anti-vaxxing? It can be really easy to be upset at those people. And the fact that we even say those people is already evidence that the depersonalization has begun. Because now they're different. They're those people. They're the anti-maskers. I hung out with a couple of guys back when I was 19 and 20 years old. We went to the same church. The three of us kind of were the three musketeers there. And then I went to Bible college. We all went our separate ways. One of them I hadn't seen for 25 years, and I got to have coffee with him back in August. And so it was kind of neat catching up a little bit, just seeing what life had been like over the past hour, you know, over an hour that we spent over coffee. But I had already seen on his Facebook feed and his wife's Facebook feed that they were, you know, pretty adamant on the anti-vaxxing thing, the anti-masking thing, and they had their theological reasons for it, that, you know, the people of God obey God and not man, and we ought not to, you know, give in to what the government is just saying just because of the government, all that kind of stuff. Well, last week, he posted a post that said, positive COVID test really sucks. And then someone posted underneath that and said, have you been vaccinated? And he says, moot point. And I saw that, and I was ticked off. Because the only reason he's saying moot point, in other words, I've got COVID now, it doesn't make any difference whether I was vaccinated or not. The point is, if he was vaccinated, he would have said, yeah, I was. Who would have thought it? My goodness, this is horrible, right? But he wasn't vaccinated. And now he's got COVID. And I can appreciate he doesn't want to get into it and have this argument back and forth maybe on Facebook, but when he's already been posting stuff trying to make his case, it's like now he's got COVID, but he doesn't want to admit that he wasn't vaccinated and all this. And it just frustrated me to no end. And now just recently he's posted saying that he's now in for the long haul. He's going to be in the hospital for at least a week. If people can help out his wife and his family, that would be kind of cool. And again, someone else posted who didn't read the previous post, have you been vaccinated? Again, he says moot point. And I'm looking at that. And I don't want to click the care icon on Facebook. I don't want to click the heart icon. I don't want to post because I don't want to get into it. And I don't want to kick a man when he's down. But I don't want to show that I care. But how can I operate like that? Now understand, this goes beyond simply Facebook, whether you click the icon or not. It's what is my heart right now? I am frustrated. I am angry. And it leads me to be thinking of people who have taken this course of action, and I think of them less than they are. Now, someone might say, well, isn't there a legitimate reason to be frustrated and concerned? Sure, but here's the thing. Human beings, we all are, and as James said, none of us are perfect. We all make many mistakes. A person's perspective can be argued against. Their argument for something can be debated. You can disagree with their viewpoint and their actions, and you can say that their actions might even be evil, okay? That might be over the top for what we're talking about now, but you can certainly differ with somebody's actions, but those things are separate from the person themselves.
And this is what James is driving at and what we are to aspire to. To ensure that when we encounter people who are opposing us or who disagree with us or who are doing things that are wrong or what have you, we must avoid the temptation to curse them, to think of them as less than the human image bearers of God that they are. So whether they're persecutors or politicians, whether they are anti-vaxxing, anti-maskers, or the most robust champion of the vaccine, they all are image bearers of God, loved by Christ. And if there is to be any evidence of the grace of God extended to them, it comes only through us, who ourselves have received God's grace and are prepared to give it to others without conditions. I can't tell you what you're supposed to do with this sermon because I'm not doing it. I know that I must. And my heart is changing, I think. Maybe the confession to you all is helping. Exposing the darkness in my heart. The darkness, as Jason mentioned to me this morning, not that he was talking to me personally, but he just simply said, the darkness we have goes straight to hell. Our capacity for darkness is great. And when we see it emerge, we need to expose it to the light of the gospel, that it can be seen for what it is, so that we who follow in Jesus' way can indeed show a different path than what everybody else is following. And so let us not be fearful of an angry judge who can destroy. That's not what we're talking about. Let us instead simply recognize that following in the way of Jesus means getting rid of any attitudes that would cause us to look at people as less than they are. Image bearers of God, precious ones that are loved by God, and just as for us, ones for whom Christ died. Amen.